flower community Sunday 2 weeks ago, and it was called to my attention that that mistake caused some harm. While I was talking about Norbert Čapek, the Unitarian minister in Prague who created the flower ceremony in 1923, and who was arrested for treason and sent to the concentration camp in Dachau in 1941, I named that he was a victim of the Nazi genocide of World War II. And I tried to draw a parallel to what is happening today in Gaza. But I didn't fully draw that parallel. And as I was trying to say that the killing is wrong, regardless of what you believe or understand about the history or the current situation, I equivocated around using the word genocide to describe what the state of Israel is doing to Palestinians in Gaza. And I followed that with wide generalizations about our desire for peace. I understand now that failing to name the genocide is ignoring the history of Israel's colonization of Palestine. And for white Americans, that failure is grounded in failing to grapple with our own nation's founding in colonization and genocide. I should have fully drawn the parallel between the persecution and murder of Norbert Čapek during World War II to the persecution and murder of Palestinian people today. I should have done a better job of educating myself before I spoke, instead of trying to make a generalization out of fear of saying the wrong thing. I'm sorry for the harm I caused, and I'm working to do better. I'm engaging in the learning I should have done before I tried to speak to this issue, and I'm grateful to the person who called me in for my falling short. And like many of us, there is a lot I still don't understand. And I welcome conversation with anyone who would like to engage in learning with me. I often say on Sunday mornings that I am proud and honored and grateful to serve as your minister. And as the minister for this congregation that named themselves after the Reverend James Reeb and tries to live up to his legacy, I believe that I should be continually deepening my analysis of systems of oppression, speaking out against injustice, and supporting all of you who are called to do the same. As Reverend Fulbright Fulson wrote, all of us who are weeping and rising and gathering our courage, we belong to each other, and we will break through and bend the arc of justice all the way down into our lives. James Reeb was a minister ordained in the Presbyterian faith tradition, who found Unitarianism when he read a book on new religious education approaches by Unitarian educator Sophia Lyon Fawes, who many of us think about as the parent of religious exploration in our faith tradition. He had grown up moving around different parts of Kansas, and his family eventually settled in Casper, Wyoming, when he was around 15. Church was a really big part of his life, and his family attended different churches as they moved around, Methodist churches, Baptist churches, Congregational churches, and a Presbyterian church in Casper. His granddaughter, Leah, wrote about him for the Casper College website. And in her words, this is how she describes him as a young person. She wrote, his teachers and fellow classmates knew him as Jim, and recall him as being a passionate, morally committed, well-spoken, and above all, courteous young man. It was obvious that he had a knack for debate, often finding himself against the majority defending his beliefs. Imagine that. Many of these discussions were on local issues in Casper, such as the poor community and welfare of the people. She continues, as young as 15, James found himself drawn to the ministry. He'd often be found filling in for local ministers on Sundays. He found his home within the church, discovering he had the capability to lead where he felt fully accepted. He was a familiar face within the churches of Winter Memorial in North Casper and the First Presbyterian Church near Casper's City Park. He was also instrumental in the Casper Boys Club, a group dedicating to directing some of Casper's young male population many of which were minorities. So after high school, James Reeb joined the Army, and he served as a clerk typist in the headquarters of Special Troops in Anchorage, Alaska. And then he went back to school, first at Casper Junior College and then St. Olaf College, which is a Lutheran evangelical school in Northfield, Minnesota. He met and married Marie Helen Deason, and they had four kids, John, Anne, in order actually, John, Karen, Anne, and Stephen. He studied theology at Princeton and then worked as a hospital chaplain in Philadelphia after he was ordained. Here's what Leah Reeb, his granddaughter, wrote of this time. She says, he served as chaplain at the Philadelphia General Hospital, where he dedicated much of his time to poor African-American patients, ensuring they received necessary medical care as well as chapel services. This was followed by a youth director position at the inner city YMCA, where he abolished the racial quota system, implemented integrated busing, and created multiple family and youth organizations to set kids and parents on a better path. Social ministry became a passion for James. In 1959, the family moved to Washington, D.C., where he accepted the associate minister position at All Souls Church Unitarian, again focusing on community development within blighted areas of the city. In 1964, she writes, James moved his family to Roxbury, a ghetto neighborhood in Boston. He held a position with the American Friends Service Committee and worked on equalizing housing codes for the poor African-American and Hispanic neighborhoods. The Reeb family was one of the few white families in Roxbury. The oldest children attended the local schools as James had wanted it. He could not preach or create change if he himself did not experience the disadvantages. So it was while they were living in Roxbury that he and Marie saw the brutal footage of Bloody Sunday on TV in March of 1965. And the UUA president received the telegram from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. calling for people of faith to come to Selma the next day. James Reeb was one of 45 Unitarian Universalist ministers and 15 lay people to answer that call. And he joined the 2,500 people who started to march to Montgomery and were turned back by the police, what they call the second march after Bloody Sunday. That night, he went out for dinner with two colleagues, Orloff Miller and Clark Olson. They went to a local Black restaurant called Walker's Cafe. And as they left and started to walk back after dinner, they were attacked by four white men. One of those men hit James in the head with a club really hard, and he went down. He never woke up from that blow, and he died in the hospital two days later. In his biography of James Reeb called No Greater Love, The James Reeb Story, Duncan Howlett, the minister that James served with at All Souls Unitarian, wrote this about how James reacted to hearing about Dr. King's telegram. He wrote, he wanted to go. He wanted to go very much. This he knew with total clarity. He felt an almost irresistible impulse to call Marie, put on his coat, and head for the airport at once. He knew there were risks. He had seen with his own eyes how the Alabama authorities proposed to deal with freedom marchers. The next time, the injuries might be much more serious. But these reflections did not lessen the impulse which had seized Jim like an external force. They increased it. All the blows should not fall upon the heads and backs of the Negroes, he thought. They had already suffered enough. It was time now for privileged white people who believed in integration to stand with them and take some of the blows too. Marie protested, telling him he belonged in Boston, and he replied, no, I belong there. It's the kind of fight I believe in. I want to be part of it. When this congregation was founded, y'all intentionally named yourselves after this man. My understanding is that you did this less because he was a civil rights martyr, although of course that was part of it, but more because of the man and the minister that he was, because of how he lived his beliefs, choosing to work on community development with the poor and the marginalized and to live among the people he worked for, and choosing to risk his body alongside the Black folks in Selma who were fighting for their rights because of your commitment to love and your resonance with his commitment to love. And so here we are. A week before the delegates to our annual General Assembly will vote on how we as an association express our values, including our commitment to love being at the center. And here we are, our beloved congregation, 31 years after your first service, this week, 31 years, I think, 10 years into our shared ministry together. Long-term relationships, both of those. I talked with a very wise colleague during my sabbatical leave who reminded me that to keep a long-term relationship healthy, it's important to seek out ways to fall in love over and over again. And so I want to take a little time to reflect on our commitment to love and what that looks like for us. Have you heard the saying that love is an action word? Of course you have. Like I wrote this last night, right? Of course you have. You wouldn't have named yourselves after James Reeve if you hadn't. That's the kind of love that I'm talking about. The love that is at the center of our empathy for one another, that's at the core of our radical hospitality, and that pushes us to work for peace and justice. So I invite you to take the piece of paper that was on your seat or might be on a seat near you. Take a moment or two or three to write or draw something about a commitment to this congregation or someone in it that you have made in the name of love. I invite our virtual participants, I apologize for the lack of forewarning, but if you would also find a piece of paper and something to write with and write the prompt that Mike is putting in the chat along with your response to it. And I didn't prep Mike either, but if you could take the words in the green highlighting and throw them in the chat, I would really appreciate it. Thank you. I'll give you all a minute to sit with that question and your thoughts about it. You're working on the side of the paper that says a commitment I have made to this congregation or someone in it. Thank you, Elaine. And then I invite you to take a moment to reflect on James Reeb's words. It's the kind of fight I believe in. And I ask you to take the other side of your paper that says, my commitment calls me to, and write or draw something about what kinds of fights you believe in. What action does your commitment to love call you to take? Zoom folks, Mike is putting another prompt in the chat for you. We are at this point in the wheel of the year, 5 days before the summer solstice, also known in some pagan traditions as Litha, the longest and brightest day of the year. Litha marks the peak of solar energy, which is thought of as masculine in the wheel of the year. And at the moment of solstice, the sun has reached this point above the Earth's surface farthest north of the equator, and it's neither waxing nor waning, but at a moment of standstill, as if the sun itself were enjoying the moment, the peak experience. Daylight shines longer on this day than any other. Each day has been longer than the last since the winter solstice 6 months ago, and the coming months will bring this decline of solar energy as the days get shorter and the nights get longer. The goddess will once again reign and step before the god in the language of our pagan siblings, just as the moon periodically eclipses the sun, and the darkness of midwinter will bring death and rebirth. But right now, with the peak of solar energy, comes a chance for renewal. And so I invite you at home later when you can find a few moments of quiet or on Friday, on the solstice, in between all of the Make Music at Madison acts, or any time in between, right? When you feel so moved, I invite you to light a candle, to take this piece of paper out of your pocket or out of your car dashboard or wherever it lands, and sit with it for a little bit. Let yourself feel the warmth of the flame of your candle. Let its light and warmth make a space of power in your heart to renew your own commitments to love. May it be so, and may we be so.